Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe to grow and scale your business, you need to make the most use of the resources that you have available to yourself. And, you know, here to talk with me today about that is Maria. Maria is the co-founder of Open Future World and, you know, really is connected in the world of fintech, open finance, financial services, and has a great understanding of the different types of resources that we all should be looking at to help us grow and scale up. So, you know, super excited to jump into the show today with yourself, Marie. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Richard. Lovely to be here. Thank you.
And folks, as always, before we jump in, I'd like to give everyone a sort of a bird's eye view as to, you know, where we're going. And, you know, I was thinking about this over the last few days and, you know, starting and then scaling a business, let alone a fintech, requires significant research, right? A lot of planning, funding sometimes, and a lot of organization. And as a leader, you need many resources to help you guide you on this journey. And some of those resources you have to pay for, some of those resources are free, but you sort of need to know where to go to get what you need to get, right? And to bring Marie into this conversation, I think that the best place to start is around branding and positioning. Because at a point in time, you need to, as a company, as an individual, you need to think about how you position and brand yourself in a specific market. And branding and positioning is not simply about fancy websites and posters, etc. It's about connecting to people. It's about relationships. And from that point of view, Marie, I mean, what should leaders out there be considering as they look to build out their brand and position in the market?
Yeah, very good question, Richard. So there's a couple of ways that I would, or three, perhaps, let's limit it. this is a very big subject. I would suggest people think about. One of them is kind of a 101 to branding and positioning. So this isn't a new concept and certainly not mine, but I think it's always worth remembering this, and this is something we've been looking at ourselves very, very carefully over the last few years. And that is, you know, what are your core competences? You know, what's your proposition? As a fintech, you can buy in pretty much anything you need in terms of capabilities, particularly with this API economy. But what makes you unique? Also, how are you going to make money? I mean, this is a pretty obvious question, but it's one that we looked at in detail at the Open Banking World Congress this year. We see a lot of fintechs launching. It's an extremely buoyant market. There's a lot of investment in it. Some are playing a long game and they'll monetize at a later stage. But some you look at and you think, you know, why is your proposition unique? So how are you actually going to make money? And I think that that's something that, while it sounds really obvious, that's something that people need to look at very, very carefully. If you can nail what your core competency is and what value you are bringing, then, as I said, you can partner with people, you can buy in anything else you need. But what makes you unique is the key. The other thing that links very closely to that is authenticity.
Yeah.
You cannot buy in authenticity. You can't fake your way around that. So if you are claiming to be on a mission to dose to financial wellness, you really need to believe that. You really need to be walking the walk and making it real. The final third one is think about who you can talk to. I spend a huge amount of my week, year, talking to people, asking for advice, asking people how they would approach this, asking them whether they think the proposition has value. And be very careful about how you phrase those questions as well. People generally don't want to offend. So it's quite difficult sometimes to get genuine reactions to things you're asking. So think very carefully about how you're phrasing the question. If it's easy for the person to just agree with you, they're going to agree with you. One of the questions that we always ask when we're putting together an event is, does this sound interesting? Obviously, people generally say, oh, yes, 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 because they want to please you. But then if you ask them, would you pay to attend? You sometimes get a completely different reaction. And then you know whether the content you are suggesting is really going to be of value and get people coming to the event.
I like those points. And just to dig into it a bit more, I also like to look at, I mean, I say to my clients, there's three things you should look at. And if these three things are working, it's sort of the center of your brand. One is leadership, you mentioned leadership around authenticity, ethnicity, being empathetic, relationships, going out there and building those relationships and communicating. If those three things are working, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10, your brand is going to be strong. And you people are going to be wanting to come to you and talk to you about various things, right? And then obviously you have to have your offer, et cetera. But if one of those three things is out of sync, are you not communicating or you're not going out and building relationships or for whatever reason you are lacking leadership skills, your brand is going to be dented because of that. And it's going to be harder for you to maybe go towards, as you mentioned, go towards making that money, making that right offer, getting the feedback required to sort of pivot and iterate, et cetera. So I'm with you on that. I urge people to think about obviously what you say, Marie, definitely, and also to think about those three, maybe call them pillars for now, because it's not about the fancy artwork. It is about you as an individual and also the people in your team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, when you were talking just then, it reminded me of a mutual friend of ours, Nicola Breyer. One of her bugbears is fintech founders who the first thing they do is delegate the sales function, which is the most critical role in your business, particularly as a startup. You have to have your leaders out there talking their best game to get people to buy into you. It's difficult. Nobody likes sales. Very few people really naturally like selling to people. It's awkward to ask people for money. Yeah. But if you can't do that as the leader, then you're putting a huge burden on one or two individuals in your team and then blaming them if you don't get the traction you need. I think keeping very, very close to the proposition and again, going back to authenticity, judge yourself. Are you actually the best person to put out the messaging, to do the sales? You can do that in tandem with somebody who has the more outgoing salesy type of nature, but you can't divorce yourself from the whole process.
Yeah, I love that. And so true. And part of this journey is also, you mentioned, is also linking up and connecting with people, right? It's not always easy if you maybe from a product background or a tech background or an operations background, or you've been in an investment bank or a retail bank, or a clearinghouse for a number of years. And let's say going out and mingling with others is not part of your being, but you're going to have to do it, right? What I've learned is you don't have to do this by yourself, right? You can quite simply form relationships and partnerships with different types of communities, right? And go in there, listen, and then at a point in time also contribute to when you feel that it's the right time. But, from a community perspective, how do you think fintech leaders and those maybe just starting out should engage with communities and also the benefit of engaging with those communities on their journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I think community is a really interesting one. So I think a lot of people approach communities thinking in terms of getting leads or swapping leads or actually targeting members of the community. Personally, I don't think that's the right approach. I think listening and learning and contributing to the community is what you need to do, and the rest of it will follow. I also think that the word community is very overused, usually for marketing purposes. So think very carefully about what it is you are planning to engage with. Well, what are the attributes that community has? Is it a genuine community? I think that that will help you avoid lots of wasted time. We, for example, at Open Future World, we have a massive network. We span 110 different countries, which probably makes us the largest network community. It gives us a huge reach, but we wouldn't ever be conceited enough to claim that is ours. And I think there's a tendency for people to use marketing claims that they have this large community. We say that we are here to support the open finance community. And we do that by being generous and enthusiasts and being open and welcoming to people and trying to help them. And I think that identifying who you want to interact with and then making sure it's, again, going back to this word authentic, making sure that you're trying to contribute, you're trying to help, it all then comes back in nice ways like good business karma in the future. Yeah. Where people then will remember you and they'll give you an introduction, or they'll come back to you because you gave some advice which was valuable, and you know, they then want to involve you in a project or partner with you or collaborate with you. But it's definitely, you have to involve people, and we can all learn from each other and be supportive, and that's what will help us grow.
I like how you spelt out what the benefits of being part of something, whether you call it a network or community, but ultimately being part of a movement that you as a founder can add something to, right? And, you know, go out and, you know, what I say to people, go out there and look for those networks and look for those events, look for those inverted commas communities. Now I don't want to use that word anymore. look for those communities. Because here's the thing. I mean, I was out talking to Raf, the CEO of FinTech London, this past week, and they hold some really great events. They've got some really good contacts. They've got some really great people in there, and we're just chatting and collaborating. It's as simple as that. And all of a sudden, in the space of 10, 20, 30 minutes, boom, we are doing some really, really great stuff, collaborating, adding value to the larger FinTech community, not just Richard's community or Raf's community. It's the FinTech community, right? That's who we're part of, and that's what we want to do. And it's quite easy to get out there and identify who you want to talk to, what organizations you want to collaborate with, and then go out there and execute, right? But have that list, and don't worry about doing stuff by yourself, because people are already on a journey. Just partner up with them, right?
Absolutely. And also, you'll have a list of people that you know you want to talk to, but if you've got a genuine enthusiasm and passion for what you're doing, apply that to anybody you bump into in a networking situation, in an industry forum, because you never know who they know. We've introduced people to investors. We've introduced people to potential partners, all sorts of people that perhaps that wasn't the point of the conversation in the first place. But when you start talking about what it is you're doing and where you're going, and it will trigger in other people memories of conversations they've had with other people, and then they can connect you. So every conversation is worthwhile and should be approached with the same level of enthusiasm. And then that also means that you don't get into this trap of constantly scouring a room looking to find people to pitch to, which is really obvious to the people who are then trying to avoid talking to the people who are trying to pitch to them. So I think, it's a catch-22. You obviously do need to pitch, but just make sure that you're as interested in talking to other people as you are your key targets, and then that will come across as somebody that they are more prepared to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that, I mean, I felt on my journey, it was, sometimes you look at your LinkedIn feed and on Facebook or Instagram, whatever it is, you're scouring or scrolling through social, and all of a sudden you have boom, 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 boom. I'm going to this event. I'm going to that event. I'm speaking here. I'm speaking there. You think, wow, these guys and girls are doing, like, they're amazing. They're the rock stars. And there's a bit of, FOMO that kicks in. You think, how do you get there? How do you do this? And definitely through my journey, it's it's been a case of, as you say, connecting with people, talking to people, just seeing if there's any point in collaborating, any partnerships that's out there. But also I realized that my first initial thought around, I'm going to have to pay a lot of money to talk at an event or be involved in an event, wasn't the reality of the conversations I ended up having. And actually, as it transpires, every single event that I've then gone on to talk to has resulted in me not paying a cent and has been a brilliant collaboration between the event organizers, myself, and obviously, other speakers and moderators. And, I think I'm saying that because I want to let people know that, to your point, Marie, that if you're genuine, if you're authentic and you find the right people to work with, there are opportunities. And sometimes those opportunities don't cost $3,000 or $5,000 to be a part of.
Absolutely. I mean, I know some events where even the sponsors who have a speaker, the speaker has to buy their own ticket. I mean, I just don't get that personally. I would say, one of the things we do is we do organize events. We have a topic first mentality. Mm-hmm. So we will invite whoever the best people are to speak, irrespective of whether they fall into a sponsorship type category. Obviously, sponsors do get to speak. That's one way that we work with them. But you don't have to be a sponsor. If you're a vendor, but you've got a really interesting proposition or you've got a really fantastic view on things, we want to hear from you as well. We will put you on that platform. And I think people shouldn't be afraid of talking to event organizers and suggesting what expertise that they could contribute and different ways in which they can help support the event, which might then create interest for the event organizer to work with them. It definitely doesn't have to be pay to play. And I think if you are immediately asked for money, then you're probably talking to the wrong person.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. And just to, give some ideas to people out there, I mean, do you know of maybe some resources out there that people can take a look at and figure out and engage with around events and getting involved in that type of world as they maybe go into onto a different leg of their journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say any event organizer worth its salt always benefits from having a sounding board. Yeah. So it's worth reaching out to events that you think you'd like to be part of and offering your expertise, being useful, thinking about what can you contribute rather than what message you want to put out. So that's one. I would also advise talking to organizations like FData, these membership organizations, Open Banking Exchange. These guys exist to move progress forwards, and they're very, very nice, very supportive, very knowledgeable, very well connected. I would talk to people like that. Also, look at what sort of resources that are available to raise your profile for free. So obviously, contributing your expertise in terms of articles to certain media is well worth approaching. We have, on Open Future World, we take a premium approach to everything we do. So anybody can benefit from any aspect of what we do across information, events, connections, investments, etc., free of charge. So we have a directory. You can list yourselves free of charge. We do a shout out on things that we found interesting because we have some AI that also pulls in what stage and investments rounds you're in, who your investors are, sentiment in the market to you on social media analysis, any articles that you published on the internet, but also if we've picked any of your news or views to highlight in our daily edit, that all pulls in automatically into the directory listing. So it takes a moment or two to complete a free listing. It's a bit of a no-brainer. We just give you a bit of a publicity boost. And there are lots of things out there like that. The best way to discover them is perhaps just by talking to a few people who are in that type of role. So we're in a supportive role to the open finance community. Very welcome to talk to us. But as I said, the FDaters or influencers like yourself, all of these people will be happy to give advice. Even if it's not something we can help you with, we will introduce you to other people. And we're very happy to do that. We like doing introductions. It always comes round nicely in other ways.
Yeah. And that's true. I mean, just to let everyone know, I mean, I got introduced to Marie and it's been amazing. I mean, just over the past few weeks, a few months getting to know you, and it works really well. It's great because you can connect the dots, right? I do something similar in my fintech think tank. People come in, it's free. They're like, is it free? I'm like, yeah, it's free. Why not? We're all here to do some great stuff. And if there's opportunities that come up, there's opportunities to come up. But on my side, I'm able to connect the dots. I remember one time someone was struggling to raise funds for their crypto platform. And I wasn't able to help them. I'm not, but the person sitting next to me had done this like 101 times. It's like, yeah, I can help you. I was like, great, brilliant. Yeah. And, you know, they're off to the races. And, you know, that's what helping out is about, because we're not going to do this stuff by ourselves, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had lunch yesterday with a fundraiser called Avril Mahani, who, if people want to raise money, you know, I'm happy to introduce them to her. She was introduced to me by the payments expert, David Parker. David's brilliant at giving introductions to people, and they in turn then recommend him. It all circulates in a really, really pleasant business environment. It's how I want to do business. It's a very enjoyable way. You feel that you're actually helping somebody. It's doing nice. That completely altruistically. Mm-hmm. And I've never regretted ever making an introduction or giving somebody advice, and we'll continue to do that.
And, you know, this is part of a strategic, I guess, thinking through your business very strategically and going, okay, who do I want to partner with? Who do I want to, what network do I want to be involved in? What do I, as a person, as a company, as an ecosystem, want to get out of this and what I want to contribute? Because all of those questions are really important to answer at the beginning, because that's going to influence who you connect with, and it's also going to influence I don't want to say the rate of your growth, but it's going to influence how you grow, right?
Absolutely. So again, it comes back to what your core value is and what your capabilities are, and where you stand out. I mean, that's, again, going back to how are you going to make money? Where do you stand out is equally a very good question to ask. And that ties in very nicely with that. So to give us as an example, Open Future World, for us, alliances and partnerships contribute different aspects to our strengths. So we're focused on the value of open finance, open economies, the open future. And we have alliances with people like FData, who are more on the technical side and the standard side. We're sharing and commenting on where we think the value is coming from and the strategic and commercial aspects of it that you need to consider and who can work with who. And then we bring in also other experts. So the Open and Embedded Insurance Observatory are driving the insurance side of Open. We're dealing with country-specific organizations like Open Banking Project, CH, and so forth. And that gives us reach, and we can cross-pollinate and fertilize different initiatives within each other's markets. We've spent a lot of time building our brand as a genuine contributor to the community, rather than just another event or publishing or analyst company that's trying to gouge money without mincing words, especially during the pandemic. So again, as I said, we do favors, we get favors because of who we are, not because of any immediate payback. So I think looking for genuine synergies, I would advise, I mean, we see this all the time. I mean, an example of how partnerships can help your business grow, I think a really good example there is Nordigen. Nordigen have partnered with so many companies this year, and we've covered a lot of them. If people go to our site and just type in Nordigen, you'll see the extraordinary number of partnerships they've had, all of which we thought were very interesting and put into our daily edit of handpicked headlines that we think people should read. And, they've now been bought. So I think as a way to scale, as a way to reinforce your position, build walls around your proposition as well. Strength is in alliances with people who care about what you're doing and will help you move forward. So I think partnerships are absolutely key. Final point on this is in the way we've seen open banking develop, it is part of the industry DNA. Seen fintechs partnering with banks, partnering with each other, with banks trying to grow their own fintechs or purchase. We've seen fintechs become banks, banks become fintechs. It is incredibly collaborative. And I think that that is a really nice business model that has evolved in the tech community. And I think that that's very much here to stay, particularly as we start to look at open ecosystems and we have cross-sectorial data surrounding lifestyle services or sort of communities that come together to aid small businesses and provide services that they might be interested in based on their data profile. So I think it's part and parcel of where we are as a business, and you need to tap into that.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
You know, as we wrap up this section of the podcast and we go to the flash round, which, you know, I forgot to tell you about, but I'm telling you about now. It's not terrifying. It's fun. It's more fun. What are the, I know we've spoken about a lot today, but what are the one or two points of advice or wisdom that you want to give to those fintech leaders out there that are looking to really make an impact in the ecosystem? They want to drive growth, not just their growth, but the growth of the ecosystem in general. What are the points that they should be considering right now to make certain that that becomes a reality?
I would say take part. You've got a voice. Make sure you're using it. With social media, obviously, it's a very easy, low entry level. But make sure that you are saying something of value, particularly with press releases. We get sent a lot of press releases that don't actually have any interest beyond the people that are mentioned in it. So what I mean is that, you know, if you've appointed a new person to head up Europe, wonderful. I'm sure they're extremely pleased and you're delighted you've got somebody in the role, but why should I care? You know, why do I want to read about that in a newspaper? So make sure that you're being genuine. Because we do scour the news on a daily basis rather than using a sort of robot, we see some press releases that people have put out again and again and again. That for news that might have happened 6 months earlier, fair play, they get published by people who aren't particularly discerning. But if you're going to say something, make sure it's new, make sure it's got value, and make sure that you're looking at the why is this interesting. So that's the sort of key point for how you can drive progress forward. And in terms of the final point we were talking about, I'd say collaborate. So contribute. Make sure it's interesting, make sure it's of value, make sure it's not a thinly veiled attempt to plug yourself or your own business, and contribute. So if people are posting on social media asking for advice and you can help, comment or flag it for somebody else. If you meet somebody at an event and they're talking about something on stage, that you can introduce them to somebody, go and talk to them and introduce them. Yeah. You know, you won't regret doing it. I think that those are the things that are going to help drive the community and the economy forward.
Yeah, some brilliant advice. And now we get to the flash round. I normally tell people about the flash round before I start recording, but I've forgotten today, so apologies.
5 minutes before you send me
There we go. You're fine. So here we go. So what is the flash round? The flash round is some more fun at the end of the show. So what do? We ask a couple of questions. They are simple questions, stuff going on in the market right now. They're sort of yes or no answers, but you can obviously expand if you want. And then I turn the tables and give you the microphone and you ask me a question, whatever that question could be, you come up with it and we go from there. And then we high fives each other and sign off for today. I used to have a drum roll, but yesterday I did the drum roll and I got a really bad response from the guest. He said, that was a low light, Richard. I expected more. So today we try something different and here is my drum roll. Ready, folks? You ready? You ready? You ready? Here it comes. There we go. It started.
I know that's not prophetic.
There we go. It's my donkey. And we found something yesterday. We tried it out again. And everyone, let me know what you think. I've been looking for a drum. I've been looking for a sound. So keep on sending them through. We tried that out today. Let's see what everyone says. But here we go. Back to business. couple of questions from my side. So I'm scrolling a lot, obviously, we're all on social quite frequently. There seems to be a lot of noise around the metaverse and also Web3. So these topics don't seem to be going away. Obviously a little ecosystem, a little economy being built out of the back of that. So what do you think of this? Is it a myth or is it a reality that we're going to have to live with?
I think it's a reality. I'm not an expert, but I have been listening to some experts. Web3 is definitely coming. So Web3 is decentralizing the internet to reconstruct it around the individual rather than having siloed pots of data against different services. And this is definitely happening. Inrupt, I've been very lucky to speak to Inrupt recently. Sir Tim Berners-Lee, can't really get better than that in terms of the internet. And they are doing some extraordinary projects. I can't tell you who with yet, but we've got an OpenX event that people can attend virtually for free or come in person in London at the beginning of November. And they'll be speaking there along with some huge brands that are working with them on this. So Web3 is absolutely coming. Metaverse is a more unusual one for me because I'm just not that techie. Yeah. But I do know lots of brands that are buying real estate in the metaverse who are using it to engage with particularly the coding community who are very present there, who are using it for customer engagement. And I think customer engagement is where we will see the sort of earliest use cases in terms of people using shop fronts and metaverse experiences to engage with customers and share products and brands and get loyalty and all of that sort of side of things. If you want to hear somebody much, much better than me talking about the metaverse, if you go on to openfuture.world and type in Bianca Lopez, we have a 10-minute interview with her talking about the metaverse, and she's a brilliant person to reach out to if you want any thoughts on that.
Yeah, brilliant. And as we walk forward into 2023, obviously there's been an uprise in the way of working, right? That came with the back of COVID-19. Do you think going forward that sort of the remote hybrid model is here to stay, or are we going back to the future?
I think it's here to stay. I'm sort of you're sort of preaching to the choir in the sense that we set this business up as a virtual business well before COVID. And we did that because we wanted to avoid having large office overheads that would then dictate how quickly we had to, for example, put an event together. We wanted the freedom to do it how we thought we ought to do it without being dictated by this large, horrible sum that we have to feed. I think there's a lot of value in the hybrid model. I think there is a lot of value in being together in person as well. So I don't think offices are dead. You can't get the level of collaboration and bouncing ideas off each other that an office can provide in the home environment. It's just never as good. But I definitely think a flexible working arrangement is the way forward. And I think people are going to demand that. People are demanding that.
They are doing, Yeah, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So that's it from my side. Over to you. Okay. What question would you like to ask me? I know we've been chatting for a while, so I'm sure there's something.
So actually, earlier on, you were saying about how a lot of fintech founders come from a very technical background. You know, they've had that brilliant idea, you know, the sort of innovation sort of gene that has eluded me my entire life. They've thought of something that the industry, that the world needs. So we have a lot of technical founders, but you also have a lot of very charismatic entrepreneurial founders, often partnering with technical founders. How do you think that dynamic should be managed? If you've got co-founders, one technical, one entrepreneurial, is that always a match made in heaven, or are there pieces of advice you can give people to how to smooth that relationship?
Okay, so great question. And I've seen it play out a lot of times with a lot of different clients that I've had. So I think there's one thing here that really needs to be understood. And it comes from really understanding how to organize your business. And you know, I might go into a bit of detail here, but forgive me, I'll come up and I'll give you the explanation. But when you're organizing your business, it's not simply about a title. It's not simply about what you're doing, but it's actually about the outcome that you as an individual are going to produce on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis into that organization, right? And if you if you are co-founders, one is producing, let's say, the technical product, i.e. the system or the app that needs to be sold. If you're producing that and that's your outcome, great. But on the flip side, if you have that charismatic person that is producing clients, that is producing sales, that is producing revenue, then it's very clear to me that there's two distinct roles, there's two distinct personalities, there's two distinct outcomes. Focus on the outcomes and make certain that at every turn, you know that you're both there to produce something. You know, you're not there to stand on each other's toes, right? So for me, that's very, very important. And I consult on this all the time because it becomes a bit of a gray space. The technical product owner, let's call it this, and then maybe the CTO, for want of a better word, sometimes feels like they have to go into the sales world because for whatever reason, maybe that co-founder is not selling enough. Well, you know, I'm going to be a bit harsh. If you're there to produce something, you're on the hook. You need to produce, right? And maybe there needs to be a tough conversation as to why that's not working, right? So focus on who you are as an individual, the outcomes you're producing. And I think that relationship will then develop quite nicely. And I've seen that those relationships develop quite nicely. Don't let the gray matter confuse things.
Yeah, great advice. And I guess talk to each other as well. So feedback from the market, feedback from the technical side, making sure that, that understanding of what's working and what isn't.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the whole makeup of an organization is communication, right? And, making certain that each and every department has a specific outcome. There's obviously KPIs to track that. And also, as you mentioned, you go out into the market and you go out and talk to people, there's a feedback mechanism. I mean, there's an all-hands meeting that everyone can participate in. And that is the crux of an organization. And if you're able to have those communication terminals or channels, it's going to make scaling up much, much enjoyable. I'm not going to say easier because it's tough, but it becomes an enjoyable game. It's like playing, I don't want to say solitaire, because I'm not a gamer, by the way, so I'll say solitaire or Tetris. It becomes quite addictive, right? But enjoyable because you can get to the next level. But yeah, that's what I say. I mean, over and above the communications, really understanding the outcomes that each and every person, each and every department is producing, because then you're actually moving towards something and it's very, very clear as to where you're moving towards.
Yeah, absolutely. We recently did a brand exercise and one of the tools that I love most is the golden circles. So Simon Sinek, don't talk about what you do, talk about why you're doing it. If anybody needs a refresh or hasn't seen that, if you Google the golden circles, that's, I think, a fantastic tool. And then that helps align the different personalities and skill sets within your business around a common goal.
Yeah, no, 100%. And a great resource to take a look at. And as we wrap up the podcast, how can folks out there, listeners out there, get in touch with you and your team if they want to?
Thank you, Richard. Lovely plug to end the podcast. But on our website, just please, there's a contact us page. Yeah. There's lots of things. You can sign up to our directory for free. You can subscribe to our daily edit of news headlines, which is a passion project of mine. Genuinely, it's really, really good. If I use this thing myself. And you can search everything. So, I mean, if I go on a call to somebody in Brazil, before I do that, I just type Brazil into our search bar just to remind myself of the stories most recently. And I use that as conversational openers. I mean, it's just all there. It's free. Yeah. Do it. Social media, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love talking to people. I have a problem shutting up sometimes, but I do like talking. So please just get in touch or, as well, there's my broader team, my fellow co-founder, Nick Cabrera, probably one of the friendliest guys you could ever meet. So, please just reach out. We're here to help.
Brilliant. And, super excited for what's happening in your world, and looking forward to you guys scaling up and adding much more more value that you're already doing to the ecosystem, and looking forward to getting to know you guys more. And actually, for everyone out there, as Marie said, use the resources available. There's a resource that we just mentioned. There's other resources that you should be using as you scale up and as you grow your business. Reach out to Marie and get in touch if you want. And also reach out to me. There's other resources that we have in Scale Up Consulting if you so wish to take a look at them. So, until next week, folk, we will be in touch.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.